Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I want to begin today's show with where I started yesterday's show, and I want to do this for a specific reason. So yesterday, I'm like going around doing my, you know, business, you know, just, you know, handling my life. And something occurred to me that had not previously occurred to me. If you've ever seen the movie The Usual Suspects, you know, when like the Chaz Palminteri character drops his coffee cup because he realizes that he'd been talking to Kaiser Sose the entire time. Spoiler alert. I kind of had one of those moments yesterday where I dropped my, you know, at least figuratively speaking, dropped my coffee mug, realizing that I had been had on something that initially I didn't quite notice it this way. So yesterday we started the show by telling you what Nick Saban had told ESPN about current modern day offenses in college football, and Saban cited Georgia as an example. Let me reread these quotes to you just for 1 second, because I think we need to set us up where we want to go today. Can we show these on the screen? I'll read these a little bit. This is Saban talking to Chris Lowe from ESPN. It used to be that good defense beats good offense. Good defense doesn't beat good offense anymore. It's just like last week. Georgia has a good defense as we do an offense. He says they have as good a defense as we do an offense, and we scored 41 points on them. That's not the way it used to be. Saban goes on to say in this article at ESPN.com. Can I show you the second part of that quote? Saban goes on to say, if we have that, it used to be that if you had a good defense, other people weren't going to score. You were always going to be in the game, I'm telling you. It ain't that way anymore, Saban says. I don't like it, but we just have to make sure we have an offense that's that way and explosive, which we have. Once again, that's Nick Saban talking to Chris Lowe, and he's talking about how offenses dominate the world of college football, and he kind of casually cites the Georgia game as an example. Their defense, he says, is just as good as our offense, but we still scored 41 points on them. Here's the thing that occurred to me yesterday that probably did not occur to me when I was doing this yesterday. Oh, Nick Saban did this on purpose. This was Nick Saban kind of casually twisting the knife in Kirby Smart, and he kind of does it under the cover of dispassionate analysis. Oh, but this is Nick Saban maybe trying to make things a little difficult for Kirby Smart by the way that he casually talks about the way that college football is today. And to be completely honest, we have enjoyed in the past on this show when we thought that Kirby Smart was doing that to somebody else. Do you remember earlier in the season when the subject of the Auburn game came up, transitioned to Tennessee, and Kirby's like, honestly, at this stage of the game, I think Tennessee's way more physical than Auburn is. And we said, while that may be true for Georgia going to Tennessee, it also felt like Kirby kind of making things a little rough for a coach that he probably doesn't like very much in Gus Malzahn. Well, maybe this is an example of the same thing. Nick Saban believing that Georgia is a long way away from being where Alabama is offensively, so why not, in the midst of a conversation with Chris Lowe from ESPN, why not highlight the gap there now? Why not highlight the differences there now? Obviously, I can't prove this is intentional, but it has certainly set up a conversation that makes Alabama look really good and Georgia not so good by comparison, which kind of leads us to yesterday for Georgia coach Kirby Smart, who at the start, or I should say in the midst of his weekly press conference ahead of the game against Kentucky on Saturday, was asked directly about the quotes I just read from Nick Saban to ESPN. Smart was asked directly about those quotes, and you can tell by Smart's answer that Saban's way of describing the current state of college football would, to a degree at least, seem to back Smart into a corner. Let me let you listen and judge for yourself.
I think if you look at recent history, elite offenses have certainly done well in the playoffs and really won most of the championships. I would argue that each one of those teams had pretty good defenses, but scoring offense and being able to score points is a tremendous factor. And the really good offenses have been ahead of the really good defense. I don't disagree with that, but I think if you look across the board, there are some teams out there that have really dynamic offenses that don't have defenses. And they struggle. They struggle when they go play really good team way. So you're really looking for to have both. But I do respect that Clemson's won championships with good defenses, and Alabama, even when they won theirs, they beat us. They had a dynamic offense, but they had good defense. And then when you go to LSU last year, you know, nobody even talks about their defense, but they obviously had good defense too because they got players playing all over the NFL.
There's an element of what Smart says there that I think is undeniably true. You can't just be offense only. Smart doesn't say this, but he's almost certainly referring to Oklahoma, a team that can score points with anybody, at least it used to could, score points with anybody, but could not play enough defense to win playoff games against teams like Georgia in 2017, Alabama the following year, LSU this past season. Oklahoma just doesn't play enough defense. Kirby Smart's right about that. But as far as like Smart's discussion about the offense, I think the way in which Saban describes things right now makes it a real problem for UGA and Smart, because clearly Georgia just doesn't play offense at that level. And in the description game here, there's no doubt Saban is winning. I mean, we're in an election season right now. Gosh knows we don't talk politics in the show, but if you do follow politics, here's what you know. You got the one political team on the one side, the other political team on the other. And if you look at public polling, not individual candidate polling, but issue polling, the one team has the favorable issue on a few things, and the other side has the favorable issue on a few other things. Regardless of what's right or wrong, certain issues poll better for one team, and certain issues poll better for the other team. Now, I would suggest this, that if you look at the reason why one issue polls for one party better than another issue polls for another party, it comes down to one simple thing. The simplicity of the answer determines the popularity. The more simple you can explain something, the more likely you are to have that be viewed as the better answer in any debate. If you don't believe me, go do the research for yourself and judge for yourself on that. Simplicity has always been a little bit of a tip-off to possible brilliance in the minds of people. And that's one of the reasons why this potential back and forth between Saban and Kirby here is a little bit of a problem for Kirby. When Saban says, listen, we're in a day and age now where great offense is just better than great defense, everyone understands exactly what he means by that. By comparison, when you listen to the clip that I just heard from Kirby Smart, now listen, I love Kirby Smart, many of you do as well, but when you listen to that same clip from Kirby Smart, or I should say a clip from Kirby Smart on the same subject, honestly, I have no idea what he's even talking about. So in the race for popularity that is college football, and that race never ends because this is about recruiting, everyone understands exactly what Nick Saban is saying. It just makes a lot of sense to people. Whereas Kirby Smart's description of the same topic is just a little bit more difficult to understand. And there has been a lot of that lately for Kirby Smart. Last Wednesday, he goes on the SEC coaches teleconference. Now, this is a quote I'm not going to be able to put on the screen for you, but I will just read it just briefly. So Smart, in the midst of talking about getting back to football and offensively what needs to happen because of that, says, and you can read the story at dognation.com. He says, we can't get in a boat race where we're trying to outscore people. We have to play our brand of football and help Stetson Bennett with the people around him. It's probably the number one thing. Now, when people heard that, wait, get into a boat race where we're trying to outscore people, play our brand of football, our meaning Georgia in this case, what in the world do you mean about that? Does that mean that the attempt to kind of reinvigorate this offense with Todd Monken, presumably adding more passing firepower into the game plan, does that mean that's going away and this is going back to the chop the wood, running the ball, you know, heavy run, you know, imbalance of 2017-2018? Is that what Georgia's going back to here? There were a lot of people left very confused by what Smart said last Wednesday, especially considering it stands in such stark contrast to what Nick Saban just described his own recent success at Alabama in regards to. And so yesterday, Kirby Smart was asked to explain that. Now, listen, this next clip I'm going to play for you is a little bit longer than a clip that I would normally play on the show. But the reason why I'm playing a longer clip is because, from my perspective, I think you see a guy in Smart right now wrestling with exactly what it is that he wants to say when it comes to his offense, and exactly what it is that this group needs to do this year right now to get better on the field so that they can match the firepower that the elite teams bring. I did not think it was a great press conference for Kirby Smart. Trying to explain what he meant by that comment from Wednesday was an example of that. Let me let you hear it in its entirety.
What the defense gives you, you know, if they're playing man-to-man, then we got to be able to take shots and make plays. If they're playing off coverage and they're giving us RPOs, got to be able to take it. If they're taking chances on the run and we got to play action them to get on top, you got to be able to do it. I mean, it never changes. I think you guys want a perfect answer. It's really a lot more about what are you good at and what can we do better than they do. Balance is always important, but balance is not 50-50. And when you look across the league, the teams that are able to run the ball and play action pass and do those things are the ones that are most successful, regardless of you know, the total number of points and the total number of yards and all the different statistics. It's don't turn it over. You got to have a ability to run the ball, and you really need ability to run the ball when you've got a quarterback who's still developing and still young and doesn't have the experience of a guy that maybe has. You got to be able to run the ball, and you got to be able to help them in regards to doing that.
Look, regardless of the efficacy of what Smart says, they're in the PR battle with Nick Saban. He's losing because it takes Smart 2 minutes to explain himself, and I'm honestly still not sure what he means. Whereas Nick Saban says very succinctly, great offenses beat great defenses. I'm glad we now have a great offense. It's just an easier philosophy to understand, and therefore most people are going to assume that Saban's right, and the evidence we see in front of our eyes on games on Saturday would seem to suggest that's true as well. And let me point this out as I wrap up this topic here for a moment. I mentioned this on the show the other day, and I can't prove this, but I have a sneaking suspicion I might be right. There was at one point in time a couple of years ago when Kirby Smart kind of sidestepped questions at press conferences. Most fans took this as, well, Kirby Smart's just not giving the media anything, and fans kind of like that. They thought Smart keeping his cards close to the vest helped Georgia win games on Saturday, so Smart dodging questions from the media they thought was a good thing. But I've sort of gathered as of late, there's a little bit of a tide turning on that a little bit. I sort of gather from the fans that I'm hearing from, either people that reach out to me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily or comment on our shows on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, things like that. All of a sudden, there are some fans who think it's not the media who's been given the runaround here. It's the average fan who simply wants to know, why isn't the offense Georgia as good as the elite teams in the country? And what is the forecast? What is the timetable for when this expects to get better? All of a sudden, it's the fan who feels like he's not getting a clear enough answer from Kirby Smart, not just reporters. This is a story worth following here as Georgia gets back on Saturday. I expect the Dogs to play better than they did against Kentucky, and I expect Georgia to go on a nice little run here, Florida included. I'm still very much an arrow up in terms of my overall projection for Georgia this season. I think that Georgia finds itself in a potentially winnable scenario if it rematched with Alabama in the SEC championship game. But there's no denying that Georgia, in terms of the very best teams in the country, is not keeping pace in terms of the elite offenses those teams are producing, the firepower they put on display. When is that going to change? I'm not quite sure. But until Kirby Smart accurately diagnoses the problem in press conference like the one that happened yesterday, then I think we're all going to be left to wonder here for a while, what exactly is going on? My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and I guess we are back and running on Facebook again. I know we had a little bit of an issue with that yesterday. Frustrating for all of us, but I'm glad to know that we've got a lot of different platforms you can catch the show, and glad to know that Facebook is back running again. I guess Mark Zuckerberg got off his couch and fixed that for us, so we appreciate him doing that and appreciate all of you being here. And we could not do this show today without our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. They are a great company to know. First of all, they're proud partners of UGA, which makes them really fun to do business with, and they are a solutions-based company for you if you're dealing with any kind of foundation or waterproofing issue. We've got rain coming again this week. That means for some of you, the anxiety heightens itself just a little bit because you know when that rain comes, you're going to see some water show up in your basement or your crawl space. You're going to see some wet spots in your garage. It's going to be a sign, as you know, of a potentially larger problem. And for other people, it creates the kind of foundation issue that causes those cracks to show up in your foundation. Listen, my advice to you, and you already know this, but maybe sometimes it's just better to hear someone else say it. You don't need to put off getting this taken care of. You don't need to put off getting this seen about. Engineered Solutions of Georgia will provide that for you. They got two full-time engineers on staff. They will give you a very sensible plan to get your situation fixed. So give them a call, 678-ESOG-NOW. That's 678-ESOG-NOW. That'll get you in touch with our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, it is Connor Riley coming up in just a moment. Before that, I want to go around the doghouse. And it's presented today, it's delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. And what we've done last couple of days on Around the Doghouse is to kind of look at some of the issues facing the Georgia offense. Now, I believe that any kind of like gigantic wholesale change, Georgia becoming as explosive as like Alabama is right now, that's still probably a multi-year plan. You know, Georgia, I think, was a long way away from that in the last season, and some of the progress on that is probably just going to be incremental. I do think there's some evidence on the field this season that Georgia is getting incrementally better than it was a year ago. I think that's good news, and obviously, hopefully, that's ongoing here over the course of the next couple of years. But as far as what is available to Georgia in terms of change and improvement this season, we've been highlighting a couple of those things. Yesterday, we talked about the need to get George Pickens the ball more. We played some audio of former Georgia quarterback David Green on that topic, saying that, hey, when he was a quarterback at Georgia in 2002, he had a 1,000-yard receiver, but they never started any play saying we're going to get the ball to Terrence Edwards at all costs, that you had to just kind of look at the entirety of what was available there for the defense. And what we took that to mean is that if Georgia wants to get the ball to Pickens more, it's got to produce an overall more prolific passing game. And if you can do that, then Pickens' numbers go up. You can't just force it to him on each and every play, although we don't mind occasionally forcing it to him, you know, trying to get a ball into a tight window. Overall, it's about the entirety of the passing game, and as the level of it is raised, then Pickens' performance is going to be improved there too. So we looked at wide receiver yesterday. I want to look at running back here for a moment. And there seems to be a debate going on among Georgia fans about what the current state of this running back pecking order is, how good is this running game. And I want to let you hear from one of the backs involved in that right now, and it's Zamir White. Let me also give you a little bit of a qualifier here. White, as many of you know, is a little bit of a soft-spoken guy. Obviously, he speaks with his actions in the football field. But in terms of how he likes to speak to reporters, things like that, he is just kind of a man of few words. So I've kind of crunched a couple of answers from him together here. I've provided the question to give you a little bit of context for what Zamir White is saying. But if you want to know what Zamir currently thinks about the state of the UGA running game, let me let you hear Zeus in his own words here.
What is it that you want to see you guys do to better as backs and as an offense as a whole?
I feel like the run game is there. There's like some stuff that we got to pick up, but and that's all of us though. Like, we're going to be all right though. Definitely with the offense, like, we just got to work together and just lock in.
Hey, Zamir, I'm going to ask you about Kendall Milton just a little bit, kind of what's your pressure on him and what's been your advice to him so far this year?
Advice from Kendall, just keep going. Just keep on working hard. Practicing hard and just being you, bro. Like, just do what you do. Kendall's a great kid, smart kid, and me, Cook, and Kenny, bro, we love him to death.
What he says there at the end is, me, Cook, and Kenny, we love Kendall Milton to death. And Milton's yards per attempt numbers obviously been very good thus far this season, putting him at the best of the current Georgia running backs. And I think it sets up a discussion where some people say, well, Georgia's got to decide which running back it's going to play the most and make that the featured running back in this offense. But I believe that is a little bit of a false choice. If you look back at the recent history of Kirby Smart, take 2018 as it, for instance. The Georgia offense 2018 was really pretty good. And in that particular year, Elijah Holyfield, DeAndre Swift got almost the same number of carries. There wasn't a real clear distribution between one guy as the one back and the next guy as the second back. Holyfield and Swift were right there together getting essentially the same number of carries. I think the same thing could potentially be true in 2020 here as well, where you're not talking about one guy who's supposed to get the most carries. You're talking about finding a way to get all of the effective Georgia running backs involved in this offense. I think it's interesting to hear White say there's, you know, tremendous camaraderie right now between Milton and White and Cook and all these guys. There doesn't seem to be a real intense battle for one guy to be pushed away and other guys to kind of climb on top of him. No, I think they seem to think there are enough carries to go around right now, which I think, you know, speaks pretty well to all of this. The other thing to point out is, you know, there's been an injury situation with this group. Almost the entirety, if you want to go back to the summer, it was Milton who was in the black non-contact jersey. Now it's Kenny McIntosh, who's a little bit banged up. James Cook didn't play at one point in time. I guess Zamir was less than 100% during the Tennessee game. So sometimes injuries has a way of causing you to, you know, kind of figure out your running back pecking order, because in a position like that, in a league like the SEC, having someone a little banged up is going to be true more often than not. So obviously the Georgia running game, like almost all facets of the Georgia offense, needs to get better as the season goes along. But to me, this is not a cutthroat battle for playing time where someone's going to be pushed aside and someone's going to move their way up to the top. Smart has a history since being Georgia coach of using more than one running back. And as the season progresses, I think using a lot of these backs to great effect, I think, is probably part of the plan there as well. It's Around the Doghouse. It's delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. You know, Marco's is America's most beloved pizza because it's real, authentic pizza made the Italian way. For years, you've been hearing us tell you about that on Dog Nation Daily. And one of the things we love is the great savings that Marco's can provide, not just on the regular pizzas, but also on specialty pizzas as well, like the white cheesy. Right now, you can get that for just $13.99. Great deal on a specialty pizza. You can order today for delivery or carry out. The Marco's app, Marco's.com. They'll bake it for you in a 450-degree oven. They will then be contactless, touchless in the delivery of that pizza to you, so you can enjoy some great pizza with some good peace of mind there as well. And it is great to have Marco's Pizza delivering around the doghouse here to us today. We will preview the big upcoming weekend in the SEC around college football a little bit later on. I'm also going to highlight what I think is a very specific difference between Saban and Smart, and why the choices that Nick Saban has recently made may be a little easier for him than it might likewise be for Kirby Smart. So we'll do a lot of that coming up. But for now, on everything going on with UGA, including the preparations for the Kentucky Wildcats on Saturday, let's talk to Connor Riley.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, I'll say hello to Connor Riley, who was a part of the Kirby Smart press conference yesterday and all over the preparations for the Wildcats on Saturday. A lot I want to cover with Connor, but let me just kind of begin with where I was a moment ago, Connor. I thought the description that Smart provided yesterday for his offensive philosophy left a lot to be desired. I thought this might have been one of the worst press conferences thus far in the Smart era, just in terms of there are some very, very specific questions that Georgia fans want clear answers to, and they didn't really get those yesterday. And maybe it's true that the only thing that can truly stand as an answer to some of this kind of stuff is a performance on the field. That's entirely possible. But I would forgive a Georgia fan if he was left a little frustrated yesterday by just kind of knowing exactly what is up right now with Georgia in comparison to the very best teams in the country that seem to make scoring look really easy.
I just think Georgia needs a game. They just need to go out and play a game. And because at a certain point, Kirby doesn't want to be answering these questions. And I actually believe Kirby wants to see more out of his offense. He wants to have a more dynamic offense. I think the issues right now are it's a young quarterback, it's a new quarterback, and whether that's continuing to be Stetson Bennett or JT Daniels, neither one of them has a whole lot of experience. It's still a mostly pretty young set of skill players. George Pickens is a sophomore. Zacharius Jackson's second year as a contributor. Jermaine Burton is a freshman. And you look at those running backs, none of them really have a whole lot of experience. I certainly understand the concerns with the offense right now, and it's obvious when you compare him to the likes of Alabama, Clemson, and even Ohio State to an extent. Georgia just needs to be better on offense. But right now, they're not going to solve those questions at a press conference. So from my point of view, it's just, I'm not really putting a whole lot into what Kirby Smart is saying right now. I just want to go out there and see how they do it on the field.
So I guess, and this is a good faith question, mm-hmm. what would be the harm in just speaking more matter-of-factly about some of this kind of stuff? You know, I'm being completely serious.
Yeah.
If someone asks you about your offense philosophy, it shouldn't take 2 minutes to describe that. Why not just be more candid?
I mean, that's a fundamental question that I can honestly say media members have always sort of been wondering about Kirby Smart. He's always sort of been a little cagey, playing cards close to the vest, as you pointed out. Over the past couple of years, it seems like fans have sort of seemed to like that. Whereas now, where you're not necessarily getting the answers you want, you can sort of see where some were frustrated with the way Smart had gone about that. And when there's a sort of want for real answers of what your offense is and what you want your offense to be, Smart's not going to change who he is, regardless of who's asking the questions. And I sort of think that's where you're sort of seeing some of this frustration from the fan point of view bubble up a little bit.
Do you agree with what I have hypothesized simply on the basis of anecdotal evidence that this has gone from being fans thinking Kirby's not giving the media anything and therefore they don't care to now some fans thinking he's not giving me what I want to hear and now I'm a little bit more frustrated about that? I have noticed that with just the UGA fans that I've interacted with. All of a sudden, they feel like they're the ones who are getting the runaround here. It's no longer just sports writer getting beaten up on, which they're kind of entertained by. Do you get a sense there's been a little bit of a sea change with that?
Yes, but only because the offense has continued to look how it's looked. If it looks like it did in 2018, where they were having those explosive running plays, which they're really not having right now, and they're making enough plays in the passing game to where they're scoring easy and they're putting up enough big points, especially in big games, I think maybe this subsides a little bit. But as these problems continue to persist and Kirby Smart continues to play things close to the vest and try to let what they do on the field on Saturday talk the most, I do think you're going to continue to sort of see the same cycle of negativity, so to speak.
So let me just be very clear as we wrap up this portion of the conversation. I think Georgia's going to have plenty of offense for Kentucky on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'm actually of the assumption that Georgia probably wins this game pretty easily. I still think Georgia beats Florida the following Saturday. The only question that's outstanding for me is, does Georgia have enough offensive firepower to beat the very best teams in the country? And there is just a chance that answer is no for this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, sometimes it's just that way. You know, there's a very good chance this is a no for now, but over the course of the next couple of seasons, a lot of this kind of stuff falls in place more. They get a more sensible quarterback transition going. As you said, they season some of these receivers. They'll get better because of that. Continue to recruit the other skill position players. I mean, I still think there's an offensive horizon for Georgia that's better than it is now. And I guess, to be fair to Kirby here for a moment, part of the lack of answers might right now might be, hey, we're doing the best we have with what we've got. There's a chance that's what the simple answer to this is.
I mean, yeah, I think you look at LSU last year, you look at Alabama this year, and you even look at Ohio State. They have players. They have dudes who are going to be first-round draft picks at those offensive skill positions. They've had that. They're going to continue to have that. I don't know if Georgia necessarily has that right now. And while, yes, DeAndre Swift was a very good running back, and you have the offensive lineman last year, just look at Ohio State even on Saturday. They put a couple wide receivers in the NFL last year. None of them were first-rounders. They bring back a guy like Garrett Wilson, who's going to be really good. And then they bring in three, I believe, five-star freshman wide receivers. Julian Fleming was the number one receiver in the country. And then Jackson Smith, I'm not even going to try to pronounce the second part of his last name, makes a matrix-like catch in his first career college game. And then you look at Alabama, they lose two first-round draft picks and wide receivers, and they still have two more first-round draft pick wide receivers waiting. I think to even more hyper-distill the offensive explosion and what Georgia's trying to get to, you just need dudes at wide receiver, and ultimately Georgia right now, they need Jermaine Burton to become a dude. They need George Pickens to continue to become a dude. They need a guy like Marcus Roseme, Jack Saint to become a dude. That, I think, is the biggest thing. And ultimately, my belief is we're not gonna get the answers to the offensive questions against the likes of Kentucky, against even the likes of Florida. Georgia needs to show that they're able to make big plays consistently throughout the game against an Alabama, against a Clemson, against Ohio State, because the Alabama games, and you could say the LSU game last year as well, they just haven't made those plays.
So here's what would be concerning for me a little bit. There is no wide receiver chatter for the class of 2021, mm-hmm. and part of that's because Georgia signed so many receivers a year ago. There is a way of looking at this that says, well, Georgia really recruited in 2019 and 2020 the wide receiver position very, very well because they could very easily sell early playing time. All of a sudden now, you don't have early playing time to sell as much because Georgia is now deeper at the position they used to be, although most of those guys are still, for the most part, unproven. Yet, without early playing time, there is still very much a wait-and-see approach for top skill players to be a part of this Georgia offense. As I say all the time, recruits are the first to know. And I would say, on the basis of the evidence that's out there, there's a good bit of skepticism on the part of elite recruits about what it's actually going to be like to play in the Georgia offense that only results in the field will fix.
Georgia needs to hit on George Pickens. It needs to hit on Dominic Blaylock. It needs to hit on Jermaine Burton. It needs those guys to continue to play well. And to an extent, all of those guys at times during the Georgia careers have. They need to continue that sort of production because you look at Alabama, well, they didn't really make that sea change in offensive philosophy until 2016, 2017. They always had a great wide receiver under Saban, even going back to Julio Jones. And so because they've had that and had that production of pipeline to the NFL, they were able to quickly sell that. And you're able to bring in a Judy, a Devontae Smith, and a Henry Ruggs all in the same class.
So do you agree with what I said about Pickens yesterday, then, that Pickens' numbers are only going to go up in the second half of the season proportion to the rest of the Georgia passing attack? This is not one of those guys that you can just have a plan to feed over and over again as if he was a running back. I just don't think the game dictates that. The reason why you don't see wide receivers drafted number one overall, you don't see wide receivers win the Heisman Trophy, is because you just can't build your offense around one wide receiver. That Pickens' numbers will go up, I believe, when the passing game overall improves, that it's really about a wide receiver unit more so than it is one. And I say this as someone who loves George Pickens and does truly believe that he's a special talent, but there is a receiver is just not quite as important as some of these other positions. It's hard for a receiver to lead the offense.
Yeah, you're more worldly than I am. The tide rises all.
The rising boats.
That's sort of, they need Caris Jackson to continue to play well for them. I think they need more repeat performances out of Jermaine Burton. And as those guys continue to start to make more plays, I don't think it's a coincidence that George Pickens had a better game than Caris Jackson did against Alabama, largely because Alabama said, Caris Jackson's the guy we absolutely have to take away. So if Burton starts to emerge as a guy that other teams feel they have to take away, if Jackson continues to be that, if Roseme Jackson or a Trey McKitty does that, that's going to free up George Pickens to do more and one, just make him less covered and ultimately help his production and sort of cyclically, all like a running water wheel, sort of make things work the way they need to for this Georgia offense.
Let me switch over to the running backs. I know you wrote about this at DogNation.com. I am of the belief that the issue facing the Georgia running game, to the extent there is one, is not about deciding who's supposed to be the number one running back and get the majority of the carries, because there's been plenty of evidence in the Smart era of multiple running backs being heavily involved. I cited 2018 a moment ago, in which Holyfield and Swift got essentially the same number of carries. But even in 2017, Chubb was only getting about four carries per game, more than Sony Michel in that particular season. This is just a program that uses running backs at least in tandem, and there's typically a lot of carries to go around for the number three back as well. 2019 yeah. was the one outlier there. So I don't think this is as much of a competition for playing time as it is, once again, as I said about wide receiver, an issue of raising the level of play for the entirety of the group. What's your make on running backs right now on the basis of what Zamir White had to say when he met with reporters yesterday?
Yeah, so with Zamir, I think all the running backs that they have, they do things well, but they don't do them great. There is no DeAndre Swift-type player in the backfield this year. There's not even, I would say, a Nick Chubb-like player. Kendall Milton does some nice things, and I think going forward you will see him get the ball a little bit more. But Zamir White still moves the ball effectively for this Georgia offense when he's proven to be healthy. And, you know, I believe 10 carries, 57 yards against Alabama, you'll take that. And ideally, you'd maybe even like to see him carry the ball a little bit more in that second half of the game there. And then you also have to sort of figure out a way to work in James Cook as well. So, again, you know, the talent level is still there and the production. I think as the quarterback play gets a little bit more settled, and I think it will in the coming weeks, that's going to, the running game is going to need to pick itself up. And I think now we've sort of four or five games into the season, Georgia knows what it has. It's the running back position. And I think going forward now, it's in a spot to where it can put itself to get more successful rushing attempts.
I want to be a wet blanket here for like 2 seconds, and I don't mean to be, but honesty compels me to admit that in 2017 and 2018, when we saw this Georgia offense led by a running back, the passing game followed. That mostly worked because at the time, the SEC East was terrible, especially in 2017. Mm-hmm. Georgia was a huge favorite in every East game it played that year. And in 2018, Florida had started getting better, but for the most part, the rest of the division still wasn't very good. Over those same span of years, that running back first, passing game second offense was totally stymied against Auburn in 2017 and completely stymied against LSU in 2018. All of a sudden now, I think we're seeing a more realistic perspective that, much like in the NFL, it's important to have a running game, but your offense can't be led by that because it becomes too easy to take away if the passing game is not respected. The reason why it's easy to take away is all you have to do is throw a bunch of bodies at it. You don't have the same natural defense for a passing game. More bodies in pass coverage, for instance, is not necessarily a recipe for success, the way that more bodies near the line of scrimmage just has a more natural tendency to stop the run. So, I mean, I would say that if you want to go back and look at great Georgia rushing attacks, struggling at Auburn in 2017, struggling at LSU in 2018, I think it's an example here of if you want to see the Georgia rushing attack at its best in 2020, you've got to really get this passing game going. And until that happens, the Georgia running game is going to be a little bit like the 2019 thing, where it's just not going to be quite as explosive as it could be because the other team is just using bodies to take it away from you.
Yeah, the old phrase was you use the run to set up the pass. Well, nowadays you have to use pass to set up the run. And ultimately, I think Georgia did some nice things in the ground game against Alabama where they had more success than they have in the past. And I think part of that was because they were at least committed to trying to make the passing game work there. They threw the ball 40 times, and I think that did open things up. So if they stay committed to the pass, which I don't necessarily know if they were in 2019, but if they do that this season and they are committed to finding a guy that makes this passing offense work, I think that's going to continue to open things up on the ground game.
At some point in time this week, I'm going to talk more about the Georgia defense. I thought your story at DogNation.com came at a good time on this. This group obviously looking to bounce back after the Alabama game from last Saturday. And I think what Smart said yesterday is true, that, listen, we can get fixated on how all the best teams in the country right now have truly explosive offenses, but they also have at least some defense. I think Smart gave the LSU defense a year ago more credit than it deserves. But 2018 Clemson had plenty of defense. The 2018 Alabama team, you know, that lost to Clemson also had plenty of defense to go along with the explosive offense. 2017 Alabama, not quite as explosive offensively yet, but still really good defensively. You know, it's true to say that offense matters more than defense. It would be false to say that defense doesn't matter. And Georgia's pursuit, wherever it ends the season, defense is still going to be a big function of that, even if the group struggled at Tuscaloosa last Saturday. I mean, that's just obvious, right? Mm-hmm.
You'd rather right now be a Georgia fan than an Oklahoma fan, right?
Completely.
Because Georgia, if they just get better quarterback play, I think that solves a lot of the offensive issues both this year and in the future as well. And I think there are enough good quarterback prospects out there everywhere if you identify and find the right guy, and hopefully for Georgia's sake, Brock Vandergriff is that going forward, that you're able to fix a lot of things. The Oklahoma issue, I don't know how you fix that because it's not just getting one guy in there and hitting it, sort of like Clemson did with Deshaun Watson, and then it's become a renewable resource for them. But with Oklahoma, and you're one of those teams that can't consistently play defense, it's not just one guy. You got to recruit tons of guys every year just to get to that spot. And while, yes, elite defense doesn't win you games anymore, if you have a bad defense like Oklahoma did against last year, that game's going to be over for you in the first quarter. At least Georgia's defense is good enough to keep them in these games into the second half. And so the over-under, I believe, 41, 42, depending on where you get it this week.
Yeah.
If there were a way for Kentucky, if there were a way for me to bet on Kentucky finishing with negative rushing yards this week, I'd do it.
Yeah.
But ultimately, again, this Georgia defense, and Lewis Cine, I think, really touched on this yesterday, they have to do things the right way now so that they get a chance to atone for what they did against Alabama in the future.
So you say you'd rather be Georgia and Oklahoma. I think that's true. I don't think that's a flippant statement. Let me tell you why. Because if you go and look at like CFBstats.com, one of these websites that just chronicles stats, Sports Reference does this kind of stuff too. If you look at the very best offense in college football, not best among the elite teams, but the team scoring the most points, one of the things that you don't always see is a very strong correlation between recruiting. There are a lot of teams that put up a lot of points every single year that almost never get any 4- and 5-star players. I take that to mean that you can kind of coach your way to better offense. Mike Leach has made a history of doing that without, for the most part, you know, elite talent. Defensively, though, for the most part, that is going to be about recruiting. Every now and then you have one of these teams that's just really, really stingy, but a lot of that's a function of who they play, not necessarily how they play. If you want to be even as good as LSU was defensively a year ago, not a great defense, but better than Oklahoma, that's about recruiting. You don't coach your way to that. You recruit Derek Stingley. You recruit Jacoby Stevens. You recruit, you know, kind of these higher level, you know, players. That is why, even in the midst of Georgia's offensive struggles, it's still better to be Georgia than it is to be Oklahoma, because that's going to make a bad analogy. But it's one of those things where, like, you can coach your way to better offense, but for the most part, you can only recruit your way to better defense. Mm-hmm. And recruiting is just harder than coaching. It's why so few programs recruit well.
Right. With Georgia in defense, it's a lot of times it's just you have bodies to throw out the problems that the offense is giving you. Say, you know, you're facing a very pass-happy attack and you want better pass rushers out there. Okay, that might mean you put in Adam Anderson instead of Jermaine Johnson. If you're facing a more run-heavy look, that's where Jermaine Johnson really comes into work. Defensively, the fact that Georgia just is so deep there and has all these bodies to throw at it, that's a big reason why they're as good as they are. With offense, to your point, a lot of it can be schemed up or coached up. And while right now I like what I've seen from Todd Monken, I think the more and more he gets entrenched here, the more comfortable he gets with the quarterback options that Georgia has. I think eventually I do believe they're going to get to a point where that offense, it might not look like Alabama did or Alabama's or Clemson's or LSU's, but I do think it can get to a point where it looks good enough.
So to kind of wrap up here, looking ahead towards Saturday and then the schedule after that, I continue to remain very confident about what I'm going to see from Georgia over the course of the next few weeks. Could they eventually get fatigued at some point playing 6 straight SEC games? I think there's a chance that happens. They don't play well in one of these games at some point just because, you know, the schedule grind kind of catches up to them. But styles make fight. Kentucky styles make fights. Kentucky style sets up perfectly for Georgia. I think Georgia wins easily on Saturday. I still very much like Georgia against Florida. The Florida offense is more explosive than Georgia's, but the edges that Georgia has with its lines of scrimmage, running game, defense is so substantial that I think it totally negates the Florida explosiveness. And I wouldn't be surprised if Georgia doesn't have quite a game plan to take away Kyle Pitts when those two teams get together. I am not sweating the Gators really at all. And then it's going to come back to a situation in December where we reignite all these conversations again. Yep. But the stuff that Smart was pressed on yesterday, I just don't see it being much of an issue for the next few weeks because of the kinds of teams they're playing.
You don't want to say that games against Kentucky, games against Missouri, South Carolina, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt matter. But with what Georgia's trying to do, I believe that the talent level with this team right now, these games, you shouldn't sweat over them. Georgia mm-hmm. should win incredibly easy against Kentucky. That Kentucky team couldn't move the ball against a Missouri defense that was not very good in the first four games of the season. And now they have to go play, in my opinion, what is still the best defense in the conference. So it's hard. It'll be hard, especially from a defensive point of view, to really, I think, gauge how good this team really is and how they might match up again against Alabama, just because other than Florida, and I think there are some real issues with Florida that Georgia can definitely exploit. I mean, Kellen Mond, I know we don't necessarily agree on how good he is, but he looked great against Florida mm-hmm. when he had never looked that good in his life. So there's some stuff I think that Florida even still has a ways to go to catch up to get to where Georgia is. So what I'm looking for against Kentucky, just go out there. If they do what they did to Auburn, you know, it's 27-6 or it's 31-3 or something like that, and that's the final score, I'm okay. That's a passing grade for me this week.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. And Connor, I'm also looking forward to reading a bunch more from you at DogNation.com. And thank you for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.
As always, it was a pleasure.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
The analogy that I was going to use with Connor a moment ago is like an old corny joke. And I'm sure this is famous. I just don't know where it came from. Where like the guy and the girl are arguing. And the man says to the woman, "You're ugly." The woman says back to the man, "Well, you're drunk." And the man says back to her, "Well, I may be drunk, but I'll be sober in the morning and you'll still be ugly." I'm not quite sure where that came from, but we've heard some version of that joke in the past. I think it's the same thing about Georgia here, is that Georgia's got a problem, but it can be fixed, right? I mean, it can get better eventually, that there's nothing facing Georgia right now that can't be improved. It is not a permanent state that can never be approved upon. With that said, we'll kind of move on to the see-through here, and we will look at our MyBookie best bets for the upcoming weekend. I want to preview both the big national game here for a moment and the rest of the action on the SEC, and it's actually kind of amazing to see a full SEC schedule for this upcoming week after only having, what, four games in the league last week. So let's do this from a point spread perspective as a part of our MyBookie best bets. We'll throw these up on the screen here for a moment. I think it's very interesting, LSU going to Auburn. I wonder how many times Auburn has been a home underdog. Now, they were last year to Georgia, and I guess they probably were to Alabama too. But not a lot of instances of Auburn being a home underdog here in recent years. But they will be that way against LSU coming up on Saturday. LSU fresh off a very, very impressive performance against South Carolina, at least on the offensive side of the ball. They were impressive. Probably some work to be done on defense. I typically am very wary of teams who put up a big offensive explosion and have to go on the road the following week. Auburn, I know, has gotten the benefit of some officiating stuff, but I told you last week, don't be too quick to give up on the Auburn Tigers as of yet. So that's a game, 3:30 CBS, by the way, that I think stands as possibly pretty interesting. Ole Miss is at Vanderbilt. We'll get into Lane Kiffin here in a moment. Vanderbilt has been absolutely abysmal when playing at home this season. I feel like that this may be one of the sneaky, easy things to be paying close attention to if you do care about point spreads. Vanderbilt, when facing a double-digit deficit at home, for the most part, has laid down and died. I have no reason to think that won't happen for the Commodores on Saturday as well. Ole Miss to me right now, even though it's a huge number on the road, and even though Ole Miss coming off a loss, that feels about as close to a MyBookie best bet as I can give you. Mississippi State's Alabama, that's a 30.5 point number right now. Anytime you get above 30 for Alabama, I'm never quite sure what to do with that. Their record in covering those gigantic spreads is actually not quite as good as you might think, so be wary of that if you love the Tide. The Alabama Goldilocks zone is somewhere between, like, say, 14 and 21 points. When they're favored in between 2 and 3 touchdowns, they have a tendency to win by 40. It's when the numbers get a little close that sometimes they're not a sure thing, and when the number gets above 30, like a lot of teams are, they're not quite a sure thing. So be very careful depending on where you find that. Alabama minus more than 30 points is a little bit of a dangerous bet. It has been in the past. Connor mentioned Texas A&M a moment ago. They get a chance to host Arkansas, and this game is in College Station this year. The matchup of the Razorbacks and the Aggies at Jerry World, for the most part, is done. Aggies now 12.5-point home favorites. And I have been saying that the schedule really opens up for Texas A&M after the early struggles. The closer than it should have been against Vanderbilt, the blowout loss to Alabama. Texas A&M now starting to rack up some wins. I also wonder, and I've loved Sam Pittman, but there's a certain point where you want to kind of sell high on somebody that if he hasn't proven all he's going to prove against the very difficult schedule Arkansas faces, I think for those who've been in love with Pittman this year, maybe a time to cash in those chips and get ready to watch Texas A&M potentially go on a little bit of a run. 9-1 is still a very realistic possibility for Texas A&M, and wouldn't that make for a very interesting debate at the end of the season if the Aggies can pull that off? Florida is back in the practice field again. They host Missouri on Saturday as 13.5-point favorites. Almost all the good stuff that Missouri's done this year has come there. Is it Ferratt Field? Is that where? Is it the stadium there in Columbia, Missouri? Almost all the stuff there has come in Como for the Tigers. I don't expect much from them against Florida on Saturday. I am assuming that Florida has made good use of its time off, and I'm going to describe that generously. Has made good use of their time off. I'm guessing that Florida probably plays pretty well against Missouri on Saturday, despite the fact that Missouri has been one of the league's surprise teams here thus far. And then one big national game to give you, Ohio State at Penn State, fresh off the loss for the Nittany Lions against Indiana. In a normal year, this is wide out, I'm guessing. This is you know, huge crowd there in State College, Beaver Stadium rocking and rolling. That is not going to be the case on Saturday. I also think that Ohio State, while it's not a perfect team right now, you know, you're missing some of like the running game defensive stuff you've seen from them in recent years. This is still a team on a mission right now. Ohio State knows that you get past this game against Penn State, their schedule really opens up after that. They've got a stretch of very winnable games. So my guess is they throw the kitchen sink at Penn State on Saturday and then coast after that. 11.5 points, nowhere near enough, I believe, for them on the road on Saturday. We will make that your MyBookie best bets, and we'll remind you that it's winning season at MyBookie. That means settle in for your chance to cash in on your college football knowledge, and so many of you are better at picking games than I am, so why not show that? Here's how you do it. You find MyBookie online. Just type it into your browser, MyBookie. The internet will do the work for you, and then once you get there, use the promo code DAWGNATION. It's one word, spelled D-A-W-G, and that'll set you up for a big first deposit bonus. That's right. Before you win money on your picks, you can actually be a winner by having more money put into your account. You can get your first deposit doubled. You can get up to $1,000. It's all made possible through our friends there at MyBookie when you use the promo code DAWGNATION. So once again, find MyBookie online. Use the promo code DAWGNATION. Then after that, you play, you win, you get paid. It's winning season at MyBookie. Make sure you check that out. Let me squeeze in one more brief SEC through topic here. I'm really entertained by the Lane Kiffin stuff. Kiffin going back and forth with the SEC. A lot of this being done through social media. Kiffin, you know, retweets some complaints about officiating. Has kind of talked about some of this stuff himself. The SEC fines him $25,000. He then humorously tries to figure out how many pennies it would take to pay off that. I'm happy to know I'm not the only one who's bad at math, because the honest truth is, if you gave me a multiple choice test of how many pennies are in $25,000, I'd probably get it wrong twice before I finally, you know, figured out the right answer here. This is what Ole Miss people wanted from Lane Kiffin. When you're the underdog, you know, it's like you don't punch down in life, but there's nothing wrong with trying to punch up. So if you're Kiffin stirring up trouble with the SEC office, poking at Alabama and doing stuff like that, there's really no reason for him not to do that. You know, the bigger programs are just going to play a little bit more, you know, conservatively, a little closer to the vest, but Lane Kiffin's going to try to rattle some cages. And I've really got no problem with him doing that. I said yesterday that my read on the officiating error in the Ole Miss Auburn game is less about the call made on the field, because I think even with a long replay, I don't believe they're overturning that, because I believe there's an unwritten rule. They don't want to create scrums during kickoffs. I just think that's just the way it goes. The big problem for the SEC is they're just really bad at explaining this stuff. So if Kiffin comes around and kind of exploits a certain conspiratorial mindset that seems to exist, people are just going to latch on to that. The SEC's issue here is not an outspoken coach. It's the league's own inability to speak coherently on this kind of stuff. And so I'm entertained by it. But this is a little bit of a problem with the SEC. They need to figure out how to speak a little more. You know, as I said before, they brought the SEC officiating Twitter account, and they don't use it. The explanation for the Auburn-Arkansas game was abysmal. No one buys what they're selling here, because they're just afraid to admit, hey, officiating's hard. We got a big call late in the game. We got it very wrong. They're just afraid to do that. So entertaining for now, and we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, I want to be very candid for a moment. I started the show by saying Nick Saban has a very simple explanation for the current state of college football. Great offenses beat great defenses. Kirby Smart, by comparison, when facing the same topic, seems to have a harder time putting his words in order here. And I want to be fair to Kirby here for a moment. I think Saban arriving at the conclusion on all of this has been made way easier because of the stage of his career that he finds himself in. Let me give you some evidence to back this up for a moment. The other day on the show, we brought on Barrett Jones. Barrett was one of the most decorated players to ever play for Nick Saban in Alabama. And in talking about what Saban does during a game on the sideline, this is the concession that Jones made about that in regards to Saban's sideline behavior. Listen to one of the great recent Alabama players discussing the current state of Nick Saban as a coach.
Coach Saban, obviously, he's a defensive guy, so I think he's a lot more involved defensively than he is offensively. I think there are rare occasions where going forward on fourth down, whether to kick a field goal or punt or things of that nature that he's involved, I wouldn't surprise me if he occasionally gets on there and tells the offensive coordinator to run the ball more, knowing him. I think generally in offense, especially lately with how offense has changed, I think he leaves the offense up to the coordinators.
So Nick Saban now, just for the most part, leaves the offense up to the coordinators, and the results have obviously spoken for themselves. Alabama's had great success. But I would suggest it's way easier for Nick Saban to do that now because he is, whether it's a year from now, 5 years from now, whatever else, he is near the end of his coaching career. Delegating just becomes a little bit easier when you're a lot closer to the finish line than you are the start. I'd go so far as to say this. When Saban was battling coronavirus the other day, or at least battling a positive test, that it would have actually been worse for Alabama had Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator, missed that game in comparison to Saban. I think during game day on the field, Sarkisian is now Alabama's most important coach. I don't believe that is Nick Saban anymore. Compare that to Georgia. I don't think Kirby Smart wants that to be true. I don't think Kirby Smart, because he's younger, because he's more energetic, because he's got his entire coaching career still in front of him, I don't think that he wants to concede half the game plan over to somebody else. He's just not quite ready to delegate there that much. And there is a really good reason why Smart wouldn't want that to be true, because so much of what's made Georgia good in recent years is the tireless energy that Smart brings to this, whether it be his defensive game planning, his recruiting prowess, everything else. That if you're a Georgia fan, you don't really want less of Smart's influence, but you do want to find a way to get more of this offense that the best teams in college football get. So I'll start the show by saying that Saban is better at talking about the current state of college football, and he has clearly been better at ushering in better offensive play for the Crimson Tide. But these are two coaches in very different stages of their career, and I do think that matters in this discussion at least somewhat. Let me give you Gator Hater Updater on the way out the door, 1,459 days. We'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG.